welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Today's topic is IP management for early stage companies. With me is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
And our guest today is semiconductor veteran Michael Munsey. Good morning, Michael, and welcome to our podcast.
Good morning, Dan and Mike. How are you guys doing?
Great. Hey, listen, we've all known each other for quite some time, but let's introduce you to the audience. So, Michael, first tell us how you came to semiconductors and what brought you to Perforce.
Sure. Well, going way, way back, you know, I started off life as an electrical engineer and graduated from Tufts University a very, very long time ago. My first job out of college was working for IBM and Poughkeepsie on the mainframes and doing ECL type designs with 30,000 gates dissipating 150 watts each per chip. And actually started doing CMOS design there as well, and held the distinction of designing the first 2-micron chip off the CMOS line in Burlington when I was at IBM. So that kind of dates me right then and there. But basically through designing chips at IBM, I got really interested in methodology and design tools. And that started my career in EDA and went to work for a company called ViewLogic at the time, originally down in their New York and New Jersey office, moved back to Massachusetts, and then went from ViewLogic to a startup called Sente, which eventually became part of Sequence Design, then to Cadence, and from Cadence to another startup called Silicon Dimensions, back to Cadence. And then when I was at Cadence the second time, I really started getting interested in enterprise software, and my career kind of took a parallel track where I went to work for Dassault Systems for a couple of years, looking at enterprise software and PLM tools and how they can impact the semiconductor market. And through that experience, that brought me to Methodics. And when I got to Methodics, I was able to bring both my semiconductor experience as well as my enterprise software experience to really help Methodics get the whole idea of IP lifecycle management off the ground. And was with Methodics for 4 years, leading up to the point where we actually were acquired by a partner of ours, Perforce. Perforce is a longtime partner of Methodics. And in fact, the Methodics solution sits on top of Perforce and had for a long time. And now, since the acquisition last July, I've been with Perforce now for just over a year, keeping the IP lifecycle management initiative alive and well there.
Great. Yeah, you know, between the three of us, we probably have over 100 years experience, but we've crossed paths many times. So let's get to the topic. Michael, why do early stage companies need to be concerned about their IP portfolio?
You know, I kind of liken this to, you know, groups that put out their first album, right? Everybody's first album is always fantastic because they have their whole career to put the first album out, but then the second album kind of sucks because they have less than a year because the record companies try to get the second album out as quickly as possible. So when I look at early stage companies, you know, everybody's all motivated and directed towards getting that first, you know, early stage product out and being successful. And all the energy and effort and resources goes into that. And you have to be successful because, you know, the cost of failure is quite high. Also, if you look at the cost you have to spend to actually get a chip to a foundry and actually produce it. And it's going to come up right and work right the first time, but more importantly, it's got to meet the demands of the market that they foresaw. But what happens after that is now you're successful, you get that first design out the door, now there's going to be follow-up designs, and usually not one, but multiple designs that have to come out the door later on. And this is where I really see companies start to falter. You know, yeah, you could try to organize things with spreadsheets and, you know, talking to each other over the cubicle wall, but if you don't really organize your design practices and understand all the IP that went into your design, and IP is basically anything, you know, it could be IP acquired, IP you developed, anything that's gone into the design, if you really don't get a good handle of that, all of a sudden you're faced with, all right, now we have to do this again. And same thing happens, but now on a much shorter time frame. It's more than likely going to be a derivative design, and you really have to understand what went into the design, what the requirements were, how you tested it, you know, what versions were used to meet which criteria, because you're going to have to get those further designs out really fast to keep the momentum going, and you really can't afford to be picking up wrong derivatives, wrong versions of IP, and trying to put them together to really move forward from that point.
So that's a good overview of kind of the challenges for early stage company, as you point out, as they go from their first record to their second one. I think that's a good analogy. The time is compressed. So what solutions are available for early stage companies to cut some of those problems down to size?
Yeah, so, you know, if you look at just the data management piece, right, this is the foundation that everything's built on top of. You know, there are plenty of solutions out there. You know, Perforce probably has the best enterprise class solution for data management out there. And that really allows you to get a good handle on all of your assets and make sure they're being managed correctly. There are other open source options out there. There are still people using SVN. There are people that are trying to make Git work. You know, all of them have their pluses and minuses. But when you look at the semiconductor flow, when you're dealing with both ASCII files on the digital side, which are mostly Verilog, and you're dealing with binary databases on the analog side of the house, you know, you really need a solution like Perforce that can handle all of those different solutions. But that's really the starting point, because that's the data. And when we talk about IP, IP is made up of two things: the actual design files that's gone into producing the IP, but then all of the metadata. And this is where things really start to get out of control for most companies. At the highest level, I try to think of metadata two ways. There's what I call the six W's: the who, what, where, when, why, and how. And there is a W in how. It doesn't have to begin with W when I say there's six W's there. But this basically is, you know, the core stuff that defines the state of the IP. Who created it? Where is it being used? What version's being used? Who modified it? Are there any open bugs against it? And who's working on the bugs? And when are those bugs going to be delivered? So that's really the core set of metadata that actually define the state of the IP. But there's a whole bunch of other metadata that also define what that IP is. And that metadata comes from other tools. So you have requirements. I know a lot of people still use Excel sheets for requirements, but you have tools like Jammer out there, and tools like Polarian. There's hundreds of requirements management tools out there that really define the requirements that were used. And these requirements tools then also are used to generate things like design specifications and functional verification plans. But the requirements become a very important piece of the IP and the metadata. The bug information, performance information, whether it's timing, whether it's area, whether it's power, all coming out of the EDA tool flows, functional coverage. So there's a lot of other tools in the flow that also produce metadata that needs to be attached to the IP. So it's much more than just design files. It's the design files plus all this metadata that have to be linked together and managed. And this is where the idea of IP lifecycle management really has its core use model in. And this is where Mathonics really took the lead in creating a system that not only worked on top of the data management, but also created a system to manage all of this metadata and really treat an IP as the combination of the design files and the metadata that gets managed throughout its entire lifecycle.
So that's a great overview, Michael. The problem's a lot more complex than I originally thought, but let's break it down to practical considerations. Do you have any tips for preventing costly mistakes that happen in chip design?
Yeah, so absolutely. And there have been a number of studies out there. In fact, you could find them anywhere on the web that, you know, when people look at what causes respins, because let's start where, you know, the costliest problems are, and that's really going to be the costliest would probably be, you know, totally failing on the first design and not having the money to be able to do a respin, but then, you know, the respins themselves are also costly. And a lot of that goes back to incomplete specifications, changing specifications that don't get communicated to the design teams. You know, that tends to be where there is a very large problem. And when we talk about this in terms of traceability, right? How do you go from a design specification through design to verification and validation, where you then have evidence that backs up that this meets the original specifications? So the first tip I always have is that you cannot try to manage this in a way that it's a disconnected process. So you can't have a set of requirements that are then disconnected from the design specifications and the functional verification plans that get developed from them, and then have those distributed in a way to the design teams where there's not a good record of who's working on what and what versions of those design specifications. Because countless times, I hear this all the time, that if there is a change, that change has to propagate through some change management system from the requirements to the design specifications, to the functional verification plans, and ultimately to the designers. Well, how do you guarantee and make sure that you have that linkage and that traceability to be able to communicate that information? And, you know, Word docs and Excel spreadsheets and standalone requirements management systems don't really, you know, cover this. So there has to be some type of linkage there. And this, again, goes right back to the idea of IP lifecycle management, where when you treat all this information as metadata, then you know exactly what change impacts who and how it impacts them. So, you know, the first tip I always say is that you don't rely strictly on static documents to be able to manage this. You really, really need to be able to link this in a dynamic way where this information is able to be processed. Then the second thing I always talk about is the idea that anything you do is fundamentally IP and needs to be managed. So whether it's the design, whether it's a script, whether it's a set of synthesis parameters, anything that goes into that really needs to be managed and managed along with the design process. So when you think about an IP, you got to think about all of the supporting information that goes along with that, and that really needs to be managed as part of the IP process. So don't treat the scripting, don't treat the versions of EDA tools that you use and all the SEP files and configuration files that go along with that as secondary information. You got to treat that as primary information that's as worthy as the design IP itself to be managed and managed as the whole part of the project. Because again, later on, you might try to reuse something again. And if somebody's lost track of all the work that went into making it work, then you got a piece of IP that you basically have to recreate its success all over again. And all of this really needs to be managed as part of the process.
Michael, you've mentioned the cost of failure several times in this discussion. Can you be more specific there? What is indeed the cost of failure? What are the stakes here in getting this right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at current, you know, process sizes, you know, you're talking $250 million plus for a NRE to actually get started. You're talking $25 million in respins for new sets of masks. So, you know, these are the types of mistakes that become very costly. And the story I always used to like to tell is if anybody had a laptop back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, there was a company called S3 Graphics out there. And if you drive down Highway 101 in California and you get down to Great America Parkway and you look to the left if you're driving south, there's a bunch of, you know, shiny silver buildings over there. But they don't say S3 Graphics. And the reason why they don't say S3 Graphics is that due to some last minute changes in specifications that didn't get communicated properly, they missed a delivery date for their latest set of graphics chips, which then caused a bunch of laptop manufacturers that were trying to get out new laptops in time for the Christmas shopping season to have to go find other graphics chips. And 6 months later, this company was out of business. So there's real cost of failure associated with this for having missed or incomplete specifications, missed changes to specifications, incomplete information that could lead to a respin that's going to cost a lot of money, or lead to a slip in schedule that's going to cause a delay in being able to get things done in time. So these types of things have their roots in real world capital costs in terms of failure. And so this is why it's of paramount importance that this type of information is made available and allowed to be disseminated through a design team, such that they always have access to the latest information, always have access to the latest IP, and make sure everything is all related to each other, so you know that you're dealing with the right IP, with the right specifications, and the right sets of verification data that go along with it.
That's great. A great conversation. So let's net this out for the listeners. Where can early stage semiconductor companies go for resources on this?
So at Perforce, we actually spend a lot of time looking at, you know, all types of companies, you know, from large enterprises to early stage companies, on making sure that the right information and the right tools and the right solutions are there available. And if you go to the Perforce website and you look under the semiconductor solutions, you'll find resources for the early stage company. And we've actually put together packages of solutions that allow for not only the tools that are necessary to get off the ground. In this case, it would be not only the IP lifecycle management tools from Methodics, but also the data management solutions from Helix Core that will manage the data at the lowest level, and also manage your projects and your programs through a set of technologies through the Hands-Off brand as part of Perforce. And we've packaged this together with a set of white papers, with a set of videos and tutorials that will actually allow, you know, early stage companies to not only get access to the information and the tools that they need, but also get access to almost a cookbook of how to get started and make sure that they're set up for success moving forward.
Great. Okay, well, that concludes today's podcast. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Mike, for your time. And thank everybody for listening and participating in the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series.
Well, thanks to everybody, and I'm glad I had a chance to speak with everybody.
Thanks, Michael. It's always great to chat with you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.